Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren, and this is our internet talk radio program, recorded from the west coast of Sweden. You can tune in every Thursday and Sunday for our regular program. And if you want to have full access to our growing archive of radio interviews, you definitely want to check out our subscriber section. You can find all the information on how to subscribe and be a part of Red Ice Creations on our website, redicecreations.com. So welcome to this Thursday's show. Today we have back with us on the program Kent Daniel Bentkowski, or Kentroversy for short. And Kent has been with us a couple of times before, and it's always a pleasure to spend some time with Kent and talk about his work, his research, and his articles. And today we are going to talk more about Kent's latest piece called Delay Plaza, Esoteric Freemasonic Symbolism in the Death of JFK. An excellent article that I've been going through, and I'm looking forward to talking more about this today. Very important and interesting information to highlight from Kent. Also, let me mention Kent's website. The main website that you should take a look at right away is kentroversypapers.net. And from there you'll find many more of Kent's articles, also links to kentroversytapes.net, the podcast that Kent recently started up, excellent addition to kentroversypapers.net. So there's a lot more information up there for you to dive into. So with that, let's say welcome back to Kent. Very nice to have you back again, my friend. Thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you very much, brother. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you yet again.
Excellent. Yeah, hi. You know, it's excellent to have you back. Always a pleasure, as I said. And I'm looking forward to talking more about your latest work, excellent material on occult symbolism and numerology related to the assassination of JFK. And before we kind of dive into the bulk or the main theme of your research, if you will, tell us about your relationship to the JFK assassination. Had you entered into this world yet by that time when it occurred?
Well, actually, JFK was murdered the day before my second birthday, and this actually forms the earliest memory I have of my life. I am now 45 years old, and this was a very long time ago now, and it just got into my soul, so to speak, and it just would not rest. So when I became a little older and I started to show an aptitude towards writing and research and so forth, the JFK assassination actually became the very first piece of research I investigated. And in terms of that, in 1980 and 1981, as I was getting ready to go to college, I worked for 2 years as an assistant librarian in a local library branch here in the Buffalo, New York area. And during that time, I had full access to a tremendous archive of research material, and it was very easy for me to get access to books that are actually referred to as being in the stacks. And what that means is in every library there are many, many more books that are in the basement and are not on the bookshelves, as opposed to the ones that you do see when you go into the library. So some of these, dare I say, secret books that they weren't so happy to share with the public were all accessible to me. In addition to that, Henrik, I got myself into quite a bit of trouble by asking for these materials because, number one, I wasn't supposed to know that they were available, and I wasn't, or rather, I should say, I was making waves in the library system, so I received a little bit of a backlash from my immediate supervisor for the research I had begun.
Isn't it true that a lot of the libraries started out as Freemasonic lodges? I've heard that the Freemasons had a lot of archive material, and of course actually started collecting a lot of books, and a lot of these places consequently afterwards actually became libraries. Do you know if that's true or not?
I've heard that too, and in my area. And I can't say for sure if this is true across the board, but I do suspect it is. There are endowments that are made by these wealthy benefactors who, pay to build these grandiose library buildings and have these ornate statues and other monuments to themselves. Here in the Buffalo area, in the Erie County Public Library, they have the complete archives of the manuscripts of Mark Twain. And the reason we possess this in our city here is because Mark Twain is a former editor for what was at one time called the Courier Express newspaper, which did go out of business in the 1980s.
All right. You have to kind of dive into some of the material here. Then you have a section in the beginning of your article called JFK, A Life as Seen Through the Eyes of the Occult Practitioner. Tell us what you mean about that.
Well, in my research, I've discovered through my own trial and error that the way to understand and the best possible method of understanding how these elite work is to not think about things in terms of our own morality, but to think about things the way they think about them. This is a very crucial point that I would like to make, because what I found in talking to my readers, for instance, who are very frequently sending me feedback on my material at this point, which I do greatly appreciate, is they tell me that they have a hard time believing and understanding the mindset of these people and the true depth of how evil they are. And in this case, we're talking about a sitting U.S. president. Before the assassination, there was a bill, a handbill that was passed out on the streets of Dallas that said JFK wanted for treason. And it actually listed what they perceived as his infractions against humanity and against the country. And these were used as justifications to eliminate this individual. And so, in terms of the occult here, what I wanted to do is I wanted to look at this situation because in 1992 I went down to Dealey Plaza personally. I had a business trip that I had to take in Dallas, and coincidentally, I had time to go down to Dealey Plaza to personally walk the site for the first time in my life, and also to do comparisons in terms of some measurements and some other perspectives and points of view. And in doing this, I discovered that there was absolutely an assassination plan that was occultic in nature, and Dealey Plaza itself, as a location, is highly occultic and has, as I described, it's just dripping with occult symbolism.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. You highlight that in the article, very interesting. Stuff not only of the conception of Dallas as a city itself. I guess it has roots in Dealey Plaza, and very much connection with what you pick up right away, I guess, is that there is a lot of connection with 33 and of course also 33 to DLA Plaza, isn't that right?
Yes, that's very, very true. And in fact, I was astounded at the number of correspondences, and I actually had to keep some of these off of the report simply because I wasn't writing a book here.
Exactly.
I was trying to keep it reasonably length.
Yeah.
I could have put many, many more examples into this report.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the number 3 is a very important number in terms of math and geometry and also in the occult system itself. And in terms of Dealey Plaza, we have the triple underpass, the triple overpass, which is a train bridge that runs across Elm Street. We have the convergence of 3 streets that form this trident type of a design into the street pattern itself, much like we see the different things that are embedded into the streets of Washington, D.C. Dealey Plaza was also the location of a tremendous amount of flooding and deaths in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before they had the Flood Control Board and all these other safety nets that were put into place. At the base of Dealey Plaza is something called the Trinity River.
Mm,
so again, there's another correspondence to the number 3 again.
Mm.
And it's also the location of the very first Freemasonic Lodge in Dallas. Also the very first post office, general store, and courthouse. So going back into the early days of the city itself, this central location was very important to the growth and the birth itself of the city.
Interesting. And I guess there are, diving into it, I know that you have a few connections even with alchemy, of course, the elements, but this goes back to the not geometry itself, but the Kabbalistic tree of life, I guess, and there are elements. Tell us about the three alchemical elements that are related to the three.
Yeah, what we're talking about here, for the benefit of the listeners, is sulfur, salt, and mercury, the three primary alchemical elements. And this is one of the expressions of the number 3, which is the union of the monad and the dyad, which gives us the triad, the 1 plus the 2 equals the 3. And this is also an expression of Pythagorean math as well, which is also very important to the Freemasons. In addition to that, Henrik, the number 3, there is also a correspondence to the 3 mother letters of Hebrew, Aleph, Mem, and Shin. And on the Tree of Life, as you just mentioned, the number 3 relates to the sphere of Bina, which is understanding, and this also relates to the planet Saturn, which is the most important and the heaviest of all the planets beyond our Earth.
Interesting. And I guess a very important thing, it seems like, is also this aspect of the latitude of the city Dallas itself. I know there's, that this is related, of course, to the 33rd, is it parallel of latitude that Dallas is located on? Is that right?
It's very, very close to it. In fact, it's just a fragment of a degree away from the 33rd parallel. The interesting thing about this is that there are many, many dirty deeds that have been done around this particular measurement across the globe. And this is not just central to America or to Europe or anything. This is across the board, across the planet. We see many of the major Illuminati cities are located on this 33rd degree. We also see the correspondence between the degrees in the Freemasonic system, obviously the 33rd degree again. And in terms of that, the magic that these people practice obviously is black magic. And the thing about this is that they have no problem whatsoever condemning anyone to death that they perceive as having done them and their agenda some wrong. And this is primarily the, coincidentally, Kennedy also had three infractions against him, which were the reasons for his death. He wanted to, number one, break up the CIA. He wanted to end the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. And number three, and perhaps most importantly, just a little while before he was actually murdered, he had signed a presidential executive order which ordered the U.S. Congress to begin issuing silver certificates, and these were called the U.S. notes. This was going to be a replacement of the Federal Reserve notes. The bankers went insane when they heard about this and basically immediately ordered this guy's death because of that.
You know, I want to return to a little bit more about the potential significance of 33. Do you have any idea why this particular number is important beyond the fact that what we talked about, the Trinity and so forth, but then I guess they could choose three as you know, as a number that is important in a way. But do you have any theories or even, you know, facts from the big boys themselves why 33 is an important number?
Yes, absolutely. The significance is astrological in nature, and how this works is every astrological sign is entered by the planets at the 30th degree. And when we take into consideration the width of the sun itself, we get that 3 degrees extra, and that's the correspondence to the 33 in terms of astrology. And I find that to be interesting, especially when we understand that these people are solar worshippers and also worshippers of the moon, the planets, and their movements throughout the sky, the precession of the equinoxes, and so forth.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah, so it goes back to the sun worship again, and of course the astrological connection, as you say, that's very highly interesting. You know, one thing that I also wanted to bring up here is when you were down in Dallas at the location, I know that you were in the museum called the Sixth Floor Museum, I guess. How was that experience? And also tell us about the you know, the possible location that they are, or that the conspiracy theory of the JFK assassination. They say that Lee Harvey Oswald, of course, shot it the book deposit library, but as I understand it, it isn't even possible at these days to actually look out the window yourself, so you can verify that you know the spot that JFK was assassinated on actually is viewable from this window. Isn't that right?
Yeah, in fact, that is correct. And when I went down there, I was very, very interested in trying to arrange for myself an opportunity to look through that window personally. And what happened is I had gone through the entire museum and took the tour, quote-unquote, and I was very disturbed by this because this was just what I refer to as official fiction.
Mm.
This was a bullshit story that they made up, which fit this conspiracy theory of the government's own making, and they were trying to pin this on a lone individual. The problem being is that the location that they picked for this individual to be shooting from has a number of problems with it. First of all, at the moment of the assassination, Lee Harvey Oswald was actually standing in the doorway of the street-level entrance to the Book Depository building.
Mm.
He wasn't even on the sixth floor.
So
that's problem number one. Second problem is that I was able to arrange for myself an opportunity to look through that window, and I'll explain that in a minute, how that happened. And when I did look through that window, I understood immediately that it was completely impossible for him to shoot from that location. He had an inferior rifle. It had an inferior scope on it. And Lee Harvey Oswald, as a shooter, was very low ranked. So he wasn't even that good of a shot to begin with. Now, they claim that he made three shots within 6 seconds, which is completely ridiculous. This is a bolt-action pump on the gun, and it takes longer to physically manipulate the rifle than it does to actually shoot within that time that he had to shoot within. So when I took that tour, I was just, you know, this is nonsense. This is all garbage, and it's all made up fairy tale stuff to fit the official fiction of the event. Now, what happened is I took $100. I went up to an employee of the building, and I basically said, "How would you like to make $100?" I came back the next day, a few minutes before they opened. I was allowed into the building. None of the curators or any of those people knew that this had happened. The individual who assisted me in this endeavor has never been identified by myself, and I never would. And basically, when I looked through that window, I came to realize the reason that they prevent people from doing that is because it would completely knock apart that entire scenario. It's impossible for it to have happened from that single location.
Yeah.
And so that's the long and the short of what I thought was a very well spent $100.
Yeah, definitely, exactly. Yeah, to be able to verify that is not the the possible location. Of course, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald has been handed to us as the lone gunman or the lone nut, of course, to have perpetrated this. But I mean, in your article, you go into this, I guess, a little bit more about the speculation around, of course, the where the shots actually came from and who did it and so forth. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? What do you think about it?
Yeah, in terms of that, immediately after the assassination, they had very fortuitously and very coincidentally arrested three homeless men, or three men who are supposed to be homeless. They were a little too well-dressed, in my opinion. The one guy had a really nice suit coat on, and I just didn't see that as fitting the scenario either. But these three individuals, one of them was a CIA operative. This is E. Howard Hunt.
Mm, yeah.
The other individual was Frank Sturgis. He was also tied up with intelligence. And then the third person was this Charles Harrelson individual, who has a very famous son, the actor Woody Harrelson, who had been in the TV show Cheers, and is a movie star at this point.
Yeah.
Mr. Harrelson had died recently, and neither him or Frank Sturgis had ever made any quote-unquote confession.
Hmm.
However, earlier this year, in January of 2007, this recording popped up on the internet of E. Howard Hunt talking about Lyndon Baines Johnson ordering and participating on a very high level in the assassination plan of John F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be the obvious benefit or the benefit of the assassination would fall to him because obviously he became the next president without being voted in either.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, this whole thing, you know, it's just, the more I looked into it, and the less the official story made sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I actually haven't heard that, the tape yet, the deathbed confession. I know that you have it linked up, so I definitely, you know, gonna listen to it or add it even afterwards in this interview itself, if it's, because it is in audio format, or is it a script, a narration, a writing of what was said in the tape?
Yes, it's an MP3 file.
It is, okay, excellent, all right. You know, one other very interesting aspect to the connection, I guess, then between Masonry, of course, beyond the point that many of the people that I guess you suspect are involved are Freemasons themselves, very high degree, and we can certainly, you know, mention that and talk about that, but there is also a connection, I guess, with Hiram Abiff, the legendary Freemasonic figure, to JFK. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is where things start to get a little bizarre, if you will. In the Freemasonic system, there's this legendary character, Hiram Abiff, and in the Freemasonic initiations, symbolically they're acting out the symbolic murder of this individual. This person was attacked in the back, the throat, and in the rear of the head. This ritualized murder of Abiff is acted out in these initiation rituals, which on a symbolic level kind of refers to the Knights Templar and the problems that they went through at the hand of the King of France on October 13th, 1307. This coming October 13th, of this year is the 700th anniversary of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Ralph Ellis, a tremendous resource for anyone interested in ancient Egypt, talks about in his 2002 book, Solomon, Pharaoh of Egypt, about how the legend of Hiram Abiff goes all the way back to ancient Egypt, and possibly even farther back than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that to be interesting.
Yeah.
So the coincidence of Kennedy being hit in the same exact three places as this legendary, mythical, Freemasonic god, I guess you could call him, or very important saint, perhaps we could refer to him as. That was just too coincidence for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah, definitely, kind of, in a way, connects with you know, the whole Roberto Calvi mess, you know, hanging on the Black Friars Bridge, and there is again, I guess, hanging what was it, with around the news, of course, but also with your pockets full of bricks and halfway immersed in water, I guess, you know, it's all, as far as I know, it's a replication of a Freemasonic, well, not ritualistic murder, but one of the initiation procedures. I don't know if it's the second degree or third or whatever, but there is, you know, echoes of these kinds of things in a lot of these murders. You know, one thing also, of course, is as I said earlier, I guess a lot of people involved in and around this, for one thing, let's talk about the Warren Commission itself. This, as far as I know, was filled with Freemasons, isn't that right?
Yeah, that is correct. You know, the Chief Justice Earl Warren was a 33rd degree Freemason. Gerald Ford was on the Warren Commission. He was a high level Freemason as well.
Mm.
So was LBJ. And many of these people on this commission were these high level Freemasons. So in one way, what it did is it protected this aspect of the murder from full knowledge by the American people. And the other thing that it did is it redirected the attention of who the possible culprit or culprits were into a direction that would completely bypass the true involved parties and put us down, you know, many dead ends,
yeah,
of which many JFK researchers have been very frustrated by in the past 40 years.
Yeah, totally stonewalled. And one thing I found very interesting in your article, and one thing I definitely didn't know, is about Zapruder, the guy behind the famous Zapruder film. There seems to be, and there even is a book written about the Zapruder film hoax, I think it's called. But tell us about Zapruder the film and your take on that whole story. I know that he was also a Mason, isn't that right?
Yeah. Abraham Zapruder was a 32nd degree Freemason before the murder of JFK. His role in this symbolic situation of filming this murder, this film that we see today is heavily edited and is completely bogus in terms of if we were to ask, is this the real film or is this some other version of things? And where I would like to point everyone into a specific direction here with this film is that before the murder itself, the limousine was going exactly 11 miles down Elm Street. Just as they get to the kill zone, as it's known, this driver, William Greer, stops the limousine dead in the middle of the street. There's 59 witnesses to this who said that he did this. He claims that it never happened, and this is not shown in the Zapruder film that's extant at this point. So there's one section of this where you see the First Lady climbing out onto the trunk of the car, and then you see this Secret Service man run very quickly up to the back bumper of the car, and that, I believe, is the place where the edit occurred to remove the stop, because the movements of the people are not natural at that point of the film. There's only 489 different frames of this film, so mm-hmm. it's very short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like all this endless 9/11 footage that we have today
yeah.
of that event. So in terms of keeping a lid on things, this book, the Zapruder Film Hoax, goes into tremendous amount of detail in explaining how, why, and what were the specific procedures that were used in terms of editing this thing.
Mm.
And the people who participated in the writing of this book were working under the editorship of Dr. James Fetzer.
Mm.
And the people he assembled were the top experts in the JFK research community, photographic experts and film experts, and it's quite compelling reading. By the time I got done with that book, it was no doubt in my mind whatsoever that this is exactly what happened. And in terms of Zapruder himself, after the assassination, he's raised to the 33rd degree.
Hmm. A reward?
So, a little suspicious there.
Hmm. That's interesting. Is it a reward in some way, do you think?
I believe so, yes.
Hmm. Interesting. You know, let's talk a little bit more about some of the numbers also involved. We have... I know that you pick up on 5, also on 11, and of course 13 that we talked a little bit more about. But tell us about 5 and 11.
Yeah, okay. In terms of the symbolism with the numbers, what's very interesting to me is the correspondences that we find are very occult in nature. Like, for instance, the number 5 is continuously popping up in this situation. For example, on November 23rd, which the 2 and the 3 is a 5, at 12:20 a.m., Lee Harvey Oswald is taken to a maximum security cell on the 5th floor of the Dallas Police Department.
Mm.
So we have the 2 and the 3 equaling a 5. We have the 1 and the 2 twos is another 5. The last 5 is the floor number that the holding cell was on, which was the 5th floor. Now, in terms of going into the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and the correspondences that we find there, we find that this 555 that I just described is meaning obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something to obscure here. There was something to cover up. In terms of the tree itself, the number 5 is related to strength, and it also corresponds to the planet Mars, which also was the Roman god of war. Now, the interesting thing is that today in Dealey Plaza there is a cenotaph, which is a war memorial to an individual who died in a war. And JFK didn't die in a war, as far as I know.
Maybe it was a war.
However, if you look at this in a particular way, you can see that according to the elite, yeah, they were definitely at war with this guy.
Yep, yep.
And that makes sense that they would want to build a war memorial cenotaph structure. And there's a whole bunch of occultic stuff going on there, too. For instance, when we walk inside this structure, there is a cornerstone, which is also the unfinished cubic stone of the magicians. So this whole thing, once again, ties back to magic and black magic and all of these occult on situations that just, the deeper you look into it, the more of these you find.
And then we have the obelisk itself, the structure that, and this was raised, I guess, right at the center of where all the roads meet, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure that this is the case, but very much looks like an obelisk. It has a flame on top, and then we have even the pool itself of water, and maybe you can talk a little bit about that also. Were all of these raised or put in place after the assassination, or the pool, was that there ever before?
The obelisk was put in the late 40s, and this was originally a memorial to the, you know, what a great city this is and what a great area this is of Dealey Plaza, and it talks about very specific things in terms of those two issues. The interesting thing about this is that as we've learned from other people who have talked about symbolism in the past, that the obelisk is always used in connection with one of two different structures, which is the reflecting pool and or the dome.
Yeah.
And this gets back into the sex and the life and the birth issues related to life. The obelisk is a total stand-in for the penis of Osiris. When Seth killed Osiris in ancient Egypt, he cut him up into 14 pieces and scattered these 14 pieces hither and yon to the sands of the desert. Now, we look in Dealey Plaza, and that obelisk has 14, exactly 14 segments in terms of the shaft of the obelisk.
Interesting.
Also, the flame on top is not only referring to the illumination and all the light correspondences that others have talked about, it's also a symbol for the male orgasm as well. And so I find that to be interesting. The reflecting pool is representative of the amniotic fluids of the birth process, and also can be looked at in terms of nourishment of the child and everything related to that. The dome, which is not part of Dealey Plaza, but I'll talk about it for a second, that relates to two different things. That relates to the female breast and the nourishment of the child once again. But more importantly, the symbol for the dome, a circle with a dot inside, also is the astrological glyph for the sun. So once again, we get back to the solar theology and the solar worship.
Exactly, and we have, let's see here, I'm going through the list here. One thing that's also interesting, of course, is that I know that you mentioned and you go into this, because this is a huge list, of course, of coincidences between that compares the JFK assassination with the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, and I doubt that we can, you know, get to them all with the time we have left here, but and this is a huge list of people, of course, can, you know, if they read your entire article, they can see all of these the entire list of these coincidences. But tell us about some of the some that stands out to you when you read it, and some of the, you know, more impressive ones, or the juicy stuff, as it were.
Yeah, the ones that really struck me were the ones that were related to the family and also to the career, the political careers of the two men. For example, both Mary Todd Lincoln and Jackie Bouvier Kennedy were previously engaged to other men. They were married, both of them, at age 24 at the time of the marriages, and to the future presidents, Lincoln and Kennedy. And their husbands were both in their 30s. Both women were from socially prominent families, and they were both well known for their exquisite taste and fashion sense. Now, the interesting thing is that you start getting into these parallel dates when things would occur, and when I started this list, I wanted to go like past the usual 10 or 15 things that they usually mention, and I really wanted to see how ridiculous I could take this, you know, to what extreme could this go. And I actually compiled over 100 different examples of things that are just, they're not coincidence, they can't be. When you start having, you know, a coincidence, it's one or two things only. It's not 100 different things. And so both men were elected to Congress exactly 100 years apart, 1846 and 1946. Both men were the runner-up for the vice president nomination in 1856 and 1956, exactly 10 years later. Both men were elected presidents of the United States exactly 4 years after that, 1860 and 1960. Both had less than 50% of the vote. The two presidential elections were held on November 8th, and the legality of each election was contested by the opponents of both Lincoln and Kennedy at the time of their election. Immediately after they got into office, they had to start thinking and working on issues related to war, and this had been a very prominent part of both administrations. The other interesting thing about this is that both presidents had a doctor named Charles Taft.
Really?
Both of these presidents had a personal friend and a person they considered an advisor named William Graham. And in JFK's case, that individual is known as Billy Graham. Both of these individuals were friends with a man from Illinois who was a Democratic politician, Adlai Stevenson. Going back into the 1800s, there is an Adlai Stevenson that's hanging out with Lincoln. Both of these individuals were related to senators and other famous politicians, and also were related to an attorney general who had graduated from Harvard University. What I also found was interesting was that when a few days before Lincoln was actually murdered, he had a very interesting premonition about his murder. And so the police were involved, and they were warned of this assassination plot to kill Lincoln. This individual, this police investigator, was named John Kennedy, Henrik.
Oh, man.
JFK had a personal secretary by the name of Evelyn Lincoln. And her husband, Harold, his nickname was Abe.
So on it goes. Definitely. What's going on there? I mean, this, either this is the evidence for you know, meticulous planning from someone or you know, a gang of people surrounding, you know, important people higher up? Or is this evidence of the way the universe bends and twists to kind of to everybody that surrounds this at this time, who's able to look at this, to kind of point to this as a kind of evidence that you know, that there is a higher form of communication here, coincidence, synchronicity. What do you think is going on there? I mean, could someone plan all these things? Is that even possible?
Well, interestingly enough, since I published this paper last Friday, this has been the aspect of the report that most people have written to me to comment on.
Mm.
And what they've said in their emails to me is that this is, you know, just not possible that they could plan this much in this level of detail. But as we will discuss in the next segment, when I talk about my family and their connections to the Illuminati, I will tell you about planning that is so meticulous and so thought out beforehand that, to me personally, this is an expression of planning more than it is a coincidence or synchronicity. Because again, you know, when you start to get into 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 different examples of this, I think with each successive example, it becomes less and less probable that it is mere coincidence.
Coincidence, yeah. Oh, very interesting. Yeah, definitely looking forward to speaking more about that. You know, before we begin to round things up here, one thing we must, you know, talk about, of course, is the double aspect to all of this. You have a photograph, very interesting photograph on in your article that talks about this, and this guy was called Jefferson Davis Tippit, and a possible double. There is a whole story here. Tell us a little bit about that before we round things up here.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an interesting part of the story. Absolutely. Jefferson Davis Tippit was a police officer with the Dallas Police Department in the Oak Ridge section of Dallas. And we are led to believe by the official fiction that Lee Harvey Oswald ran off into the neighborhood and was distraught that he just killed the president and was trying to get away and so on and so forth, and he just killed this guy who happens to look an awful lot like John F. Kennedy.
Mm.
Now, the coincidence about this is that this man looked so much like John Kennedy that his nickname was JFK. And they used to call him Jack.
Okay.
Tippit. Going back to Hiram Abiff again, Tippit was also shot in the same three places as Abiff and JFK. So once again, we have this improbable coincidence scenario going on.
Yeah.
And what when we start looking at the autopsy photos, and I direct people to a very interesting report by Robert D. Morningstar, which is linked in the sources section at the bottom of the article.
Mm.
Morningstar talks about very intimate and very tiny details of the autopsy photos and points out things that are inconsistent with this being JFK. And by the time you get through this mid-size report, I doubt anybody could come to the conclusion that that person in those autopsy photos is anybody but Tippit. So it gave them the excuse of using a body double in terms which may have been for the very first time, for all I know. I don't have access to that information, but it just allowed them to manipulate the autopsy, the body, and everything to support the official fiction of the event and to steer investigators and researchers such as myself into an opposite direction when in fact we have the answers staring at us right in the face.
Isn't that interesting? Because I've even heard, and again, I can't, you know, verify if this is true or not, but I've heard even that the brain, you know, of JFK actually was lost somehow. Have you heard about this? What's your take on that?
Yes, that is true. That actually did happen. And I believe the reason that that did happen is because the bullet trajectories that were as part of that brain evidence were showing the wrong answers to things. So it, you know, had to disappear. You know, that just seems to be the way these people operate. If it benefits the official fiction, it's rammed down our throats. If it doesn't benefit the official fiction, let's take 9/11 just for a second. The photographs of what supposedly happened at the Pentagon, you know, there's 100 different video cameras and surveillance cameras around the Pentagon, and none of that footage has ever surfaced, even all these years later. So, obviously, it didn't fit the official fiction, so it has to disappear.
I see. So, I mean, in a way, in conclusion, beyond that this was, you know, of course, a nightmare on Elm Street, as it were, but do you think that we will know? Because what is it, isn't there a date upcoming in, what could it be, a few years maybe beyond, or you know, that they actually say that they are going to release the real murderer, as it were. I don't know if this has passed or not. This was, of course, something in Oliver Stone's film, I think, at the end of the film. They say that they are going to release the real murderer. If so, do you think that, you know, they will stick with the Lee Harvey Oswald thing, or what do you think about it?
Well, in terms of that, I think that just looking at the various polls and so forth that have come out in the past 10 years or so, it appears that no one at this point with any reasonable common sense believes Oswald did this alone. They say they're going to release the records and everything is gag ordered at the moment, and everything is you know, sealed and so forth. But what my concern is here is George Herbert Walker Bush was one of the participants in this murder, and there's a photograph of him standing outside of the school book depository building. So he cannot say that he wasn't there because there's a photograph of him in that location at that time. So what I'm concerned might happen here is that this grooming process that you and I talked about in the past with this George P. Bush character becoming the first Hispanic president, he may be the president at the very time they're saying they're going to open up these records. And all he would have to do is sign a presidential executive order, which would say this needs to be sealed for another 100 years, or whatever the case may be, in terms of a time limit, and that stuff is gone again. And we may not have the answer ever. I don't think we're going to see, you know, justice served here.
No.
But at the same time, I do believe that there that this case has been solved, in other words.
Mm, yeah, I see what you mean, exactly. Yeah, and in a way, you know, as this deathbed tape, still there is information, you know, after this many years, still there is information coming to light, new information that that verifies, obviously, you know, that there is so much more going on with the assassination of JFK than what we are being told with the official version. So, I mean, again, Ken, thank you so much for this segment, and we are going to continue now, and as you mentioned earlier, talk a little bit more about your family connections to the Illuminati. We're going to talk a little bit about this planning process that you mentioned also. But before we round off this segment, tell us about your website, and also mention your newly created website, Controversy Tapes, with your podcasts on it.
Sure, thank you. I'll be happy to do that. My website is controversypapers.net. And there are over 450 controversy papers, which are from a range of lengths about a range of subjects, and there's much, much education that can happen by people visiting and reading the material that I've put together. Within the last month, I have started a podcast that I refer to as the Controversy Tapes, and this is a second website, controversytapes.net, which is it serves two purposes, actually. It's an archive of some of the other interviews that I've done, and it also contains the podcast episodes as they're uploaded every Monday. So far, I've had Michael Tsarian, Freeman, Kevin Booth from Austin, Texas, mm-hmm. Talking about his lifelong friendship with the late, great Bill Hicks,
mm-hmm.
Comedian and political philosopher,
mm-hmm.
and I have many interesting things in store for the future with the Controversy Tapes.
Very interesting. So everybody, do check it out. It's controversypapers.net and it's controversytapes.net, and check out this latest article and go through the list of those coincidences. There's amazing stuff there for you to read. High strangeness in Dallas, as it were. But for this segment, Ken, thank you so much for coming on, and we will continue in the next segment.
Thank you, Henrik.
Thank you. In the transition over to July, we are going to bump up our subscription rates. Take advantage of our 3 month or 6 month subscriptions right now. We will be back again on Sunday with another program lined up for you. Until then, take good care. This is Henrik Palmgren, signing out.